You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello and welcome to episode 44 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
Unfortunately, Cookie is away this week, but that's okay because we are joined by Ray Wilmot.
Hello.
Ray writes for sites like Now Gamer. He's written stuff for VG247, This Is My Joystick, and in the past year he's launched Expansive DLC, a site dedicated to reporting news on and reviewing game expansions and download content. Yes, it's all pretty darn awesome.
Darn.
as this is a post E3 week, and it's the first.
It sounds as though it's like post apocalyptic.
It feels like it, to be honest, you know? It's a bit like that. But because of that, it means we don't have our regular kind of mix of news and the main discussion this week. We're going to be going through the motions, picking over the remains, calling up.
Where's your coffee?
Okay.
You're spilling it over.
Well, yeah, mind my coffee as well. But basically,
she's that angry.
Yeah, just picking over the remains of E3 and just kind of going, what the hell just happened?
A whole bunch of stupid.
That was it. So we decided we'd go with a logical order of progression. So we're going to deal with thoughts around, obviously, the guys that make boxes first. And in the order they presented, Microsoft followed by Sony, followed by Nintendo, and then we're going to look at some publisher developer stuff, and then we're going to get onto a little project that Ray's working on at the moment. So, Microsoft.
Oh, Microsoft.
Yes. I'm unsure how to feel.
It's not looking good.
It's interesting how, after the launch announcement, they did this last week. They not only sort of tried to steal the thunder back again with, like, oh, no, we do games, but here's all this other stuff we do as well with this thing, this box that's going to cost you £429.
Yeah, oh, did you see the bit? Have you actually seen the clip where they announced the price on the stage?
I've tried to avoid that because I figured my psychic link with my bank account couldn't deal with hearing it.
Psychic link?
Yeah.
Well, let's just say that when they announced on the Xbox One stage the prices, there was a wait for a reaction. The applause was not spontaneous like it was at the Sony one. There was just a sort of silence. And then you could see him willing to know, I've announced the price, react. And then the room goes, woo, there's a price. We know a price now. It's a terrible price, but we know one.
Could have been worse, could have been your firstborn.
Yeah, no one's firstborn will be sacrificed for this.
It's quite funny, though, because I was expecting the price to actually be higher than it is. I mean, I'd probably one of the few that is, but with the next gen, I was expecting it to be up 500 upwards, to be honest. But
yeah, I mean, I've always kind of thought that as well. I mean, I never really get any consoles apart from Nintendo on launch. And, I kind of remember them being like really, really, really high priced. So when I had like £429 and I thought to myself, that could buy a reasonable-ish laptop. Just from, just a random shop.
What I thought when I heard that price was, oh, the same price as the PS3. That just sort of slithered out at retail and sat there stinking in the sun for a good few months until they cut the price. The 360 was 320 on launch at the end of 2005.
Which, even in old money put in today's money, is still a good deal. Yeah, well, there's been a recession. People's currencies have had to deal with inflation and deflation.
It just sounds like you should be converting it to shillings.
Well, actually, I can't do that.
That's the old days of Commodore 64s and Spectrums and
yeah,
that Amstrad monstrosity, Alan Wanging Sugar.
but beyond the price, they still failed to mention any exclusives that I was excited about.
Yeah.
It was a Halo game.
Yay.
That was a big shock. I was shocked by that. I was rocked. I was no, good God, no, you're not doing a Halo game for an Xbox console. Really? Are you?
Yeah, that was kind of... I'm not sure how I knew. I think it would have been more unexpected if they hadn't announced one.
I did think it was very silly how Master Chief was wearing that sort of cloak and hood.
It looked like a poncho type thing. Like one of those things you'd buy at Alton Towers because it's a really horrible day that you've gone there. It's raining like nobody's business. So not only have you got to worry about the water rides getting you soaked, but just the general elements as well.
See, exclusive. It's teenage Master Chief going on holiday with his family, his parents.
It all goes horribly wrong. Just as they're going... I can't remember the names of any of the roller coasters now, Alton Towers. Is Oblivion still going?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Just as he's riding down Oblivion, the alien forces turn up.
I am emoting in my deep voice.
Comes out in Skyrim.
Yeah.
See, that's all I could think of as soon as someone said Oblivion. The music started in my head, and I'm thinking I could be standing there crafting weapons and enchanting them.
Yeah.
But I find it interesting how they've suddenly gone, we've actually got, like online play on our like gold account and whatnot. And,
yeah.
The PS3 is rising in popularity with, free play and, they're doing the subscription deals. Like, we'll just, give a couple of games out. Basically copying.
Yeah, did you see what the games were?
Yes, it was Halo 3 and, what's the other one? Assassin's Creed 2. That's the one.
Yeah. So if I could just travel back in time about 4 years and tell myself, don't bother, because if you keep subscribing to Xbox Live Gold, you'll get those games for free, quote unquote.
When's
in
that?
In 2013, and you can play them then. If you also completely ignore the raft of sequels and sort of side titles that have come out for those as well. Thus rendering them utterly pointless.
Indeed. PSN Plus has existed for a fair while now. I've always been jealous of PSN Plus subscribers. I am still jealous of PSN Plus subscribers.
Yeah, this hasn't really helped.
No.
It's not made me feel any better.
Is it me, or is like most of the games that are coming out, it's like, oh yes, and you can, have this like, was it a glass or...
Smart glass.
Smart glass.
Yeah.
It's like, so what you're trying to do is you looked at the Wii U, gone, nah, that's shit. Oh, wait, they're actually getting a little bit of success out of this. Right, we'll have it.
Well, people find it interesting, and the fact that they've got to find some of the implementation with all the crap to have come out of Windows 8, basically.
I mean,
at least they can do it with an app rather than something that looks like a very cheap Chinese Android tablet.
It's cute, darn it.
Plus, it has controls at the side of the screen. I mean...
So do a lot of the tablets now. So do... there are all kinds of gaming tablets coming out now with better screens.
At the same time, I'm excited for games coming out on the Wii U, though. At the same time, we'll get to that when we talk about Nintendo.
Microsoft.
Okay, the other thing that I think was it in the preamp, because there was like a pre E3 thing that happened last week or the week before last.
Yeah.
And sort of revelations about online that came out due to
is
it Don Metterick?
Arch arsehole.
A gentleman who appears to be incapable of maintaining brand respectability whilst talking to members of the press.
I swear he's a Sony plant. It's the only explanation. He makes no sense otherwise. He just keeps opening his gob and bollocks tumble out.
I mean, to be fair, though, I mean, Microsoft nor Sony's PR do a very good job of...
Well, Sony's not the issue at the moment, but we'll discuss what Sony's been up to in light of everything in a moment. I just want to talk about Metric or Metric.
I think Metric.
Well, anyway, so he went and said in an interview that, you know, basically the only people that should be worried about having to connect every 24 hours with their system to make sure everything still works, or, you know, basically cloud stuff, the only people that are probably going to be disappointed by this are people living on submarines, you know, because it's really bad to get an internet connection on a submarine, apparently. It probably is.
Did you also hear the other quote he gave about the, you know, the people who don't want to connect to the internet?
Oh yeah, that you can have an Xbox 360.
Yeah, we've got a product for the people who don't want to use the internet. It's called the Xbox 360. There's another product that's coming out at the end of the year as well, which would work as well, and it would be more advanced than the 360, and you don't make it. And you don't seem to be getting that. It doesn't seem to be going in.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that alarmed me, because I just kind of looked around the whole cloud thing a bit more, and I wrote a piece for Drowning in Multimedia about it, but basically, even in America, the internet infrastructure they've got, and this is something we've discussed before, again and again, with like OnLive and just cloud gaming.
OnLive.
It's just, the infrastructure isn't there. Like, there's very few places that have essentially fibre to premises or fibre to house. And basically, in the UK, certainly, which is the largest market share area in Europe for the Xbox 360, we actually have some of the worst internet connections in all of Europe, to an extent. I mean, while...
Why doesn't that surprise me?
While certain parties may be extolling the virtues of fibre to cabinet, really, it's absolute BS when you consider the fact that as soon as the connection leaves the cabinet via a copper wire, the quality completely drops off. And it's
carried by donkey.
And carried by a donkey as well, who's been whipped severely as well, so he's clearly not in the best of moods.
Very overworked elderly donkey that's been forced to work beyond its pensionable age.
Yes.
Due to welfare cuts.
How do they shrink the donkeys down to go into the wires?
They got thingy shrink ray from Harvey Burton. The only way they can do it.
Also hammers.
That too. But it's just like I was trying to get my head around it, and the fact that even if like because we're in Cornwall, that's Paul and I, and obviously we've got super fast stuff being rolled out by a certain British company who shall remain nameless for the minute, but you know who I mean. And it's all fibre to cabinet, and it's like great. So I'm like over 500-600 meters away from the cabinet, which has got fiber going to it, and then I'm on, you know, regular phone lines, and it's such as we're more near than a kilometer really away, and the drop off at that point is like was not much better than the connection.
No, I mean you can obviously get better speeds than what you can at the moment, but
not significantly more. And this is where the cloud computation ideas, which were furthered, you know, during E3 by Microsoft, caused me the chills, because it's like, well, I don't have the connection for you to go offload, allowing developers and publishers to offload calculations to do whatever stupid graphics they're going to be. Graphics, it probably will not be anything to do with AI, which would be a decent cause.
You wouldn't be able to, I wouldn't have thought.
The things they were trying to sort of say that they could offload for the calculations, that was like amazing things to do with positioning and graphics.
Because presumably,
but anyway,
the game will run without the connection. It's just
I wouldn't be so sure, and I wouldn't be so sure if it would run to as high a quality, because it's like,
well, obviously it wouldn't kind of run as higher graphical quality, but
I'm not entirely. They haven't made it clear whether or not if a game has to offload for calculations, it's, you know, it's built into the code that it will offload to do certain things, whether or not it will operate properly should there be no internet connection at the time, because obviously they're insisting that it was going to have to connect every 24 hours anyway. Which isn't going to use that in and of itself. It's not going to use a huge amount of bloody connection. It's just the idea of computation in the cloud that just fills me with dread. Dread.
Speaking of internet connection, did you hear the latest fantasticness about, I think it's about 21 territories that Microsoft are talking about releasing the Xbox One in.
Mm.
Now, one of the brilliant parts about the net connection for this is they will be IP checking your country.
Oh.
So there are a few people on Eurogamer who were pointing out that, well, I'm working in London, but I'm going home to Portugal. So they could walk into a store, and for some reason I'm pretty sure they're going to be able to walk into a store and buy an Xbox One come the end of the year. They can walk into a store in London, buy an Xbox One, take it home to Portugal. No, you can't play it there because if they're not officially launching in Portugal, it will be blocked.
So you'd essentially end up with a Brit console that can do nothing better than maybe play Blu-rays.
Yeah, well, it would just pop up with a screen saying, sorry, you're in an unsupported territory.
That's lovely.
It's which fabulous. Is just, it's incredible. They're finding new and interesting ways to screw anyone over who might still actually want one of these things.
Well, I mean, I just find it, like, why is it that they actually want people to check in every 24 hours? Exactly.
So being overzealous with Adira. I thought it was bad enough when Adobe announced Creative Cloud and they wanted you to check in every 90 or 180 days that the software you've downloaded is still legitimately yours. But apparently Microsoft went and took that one stage further, but now it's every day, mate.
So using the internet is fine, says the man sitting browsing the internet talking on Skype with people hundreds of miles away. Using the internet, absolutely fine. Having to check in every 24 hours without fail or else all the stuff on your console, whether it's on disk or digital download, is rendered completely unusable to you until it can connect and you're in the right country for it. That's just insane.
I mean, at least some people have tried to say, oh, but Steam already does this, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, but Steam, you've got the option to say, oh, I'm shutting you down, but by the way, the next time we boot up, oh, we're going to be offline. There we go.
Yeah, you switch it to offline, and it takes, I think it's every few weeks or something like that, where it needs to, you know, reconnect and check to make sure that, you know, everything's legit.
And to be honest, I think it's not even just for everything's legit, it's because almost everyone's got bloody Team Fortress 2 and they just need to check if there's any updates. I mean, not that you'd be probably using it if you weren't connected online, but you might be playing it offline on a LAN. Could be happening. It's a very small minority, I suspect, doing that, but it could be happening.
Well, apparently they've actually said that they might actually be looking at offline gaming as a possibility now.
Really?
Probably all the outcry. That's something that's now being considered.
Wait, sorry, who's looking into it? Microsoft or Valve?
Microsoft.
I'm not sure because it's was it the analogy you used Retroid the other week when we talked after their announcement video about the whole, oh, daddy's finally seen what the son's up to and it's just been like, ah.
Oh, with the talking about the Xbox division of Microsoft, which was, you know, responsible for the 360 and the original Xbox. They've been doing things, you know, for the, you know, they were given basically, you know, almost free rein to go and develop game boxes to tempt gamers. And this is the one where it's Big Daddy Microsoft with Office and Windows 8 with the, you know, take your damn medicine, we own you. You just accept, you know, whatever the hell we give you, and that's what you'll be using. That seems to be the attitude with Xbox One. It's we're not going to listen at all. And it's like now Daddy's in charge because you know, little Junior cost too much with, you know, Red Ring and everything. And it's just, you know, we're going to shoehorn our web TV box into the corner of the room, and that's what we're selling it on. And
is it me or is, like, all of the developers seemingly trying to incorporate some sort of, like, TV programming into the games as well?
Are they?
I think I've heard about, like, numerous times, like, over E3, where developers have gone, oh, yes, and it will connect with a new Halo series or new this series or new that series.
But that's probably mostly first-party stuff.
Mm. Yeah, but no, it's actually quite interesting because I was going through the feed on Joystick rather than actually watching the conference itself. I just kind of had it kind of updating. And actually turned around and said, okay, so they've just announced like all the indie titles and whatnot that they're going to be bringing in. And it's like Minecraft Xbox One version. And then they swiftly moved on.
Oh, yeah, don't forget, though, then it was later revealed that your version from the Xbox 360 will not export at all to the Xbox One.
Yeah, don't forget that.
So you're going to have to rebuild your, you know, your Minecraft version of the Red Keep.
I can kind of see the logic on that, because you are moving from something that's got total RAM of, you know, 512 meg to... was it something like 5 gigabytes usable, you know, without any of the OS intruding on it with the Xbox One? So I can kind of see that, but why on earth you can't just export? You know, why it can't be a one-way export?
Like with the Wii and Wii U.
Yeah.
No, transferring the system over. You're warned before that happens that, you know, it is a one-way thing. Mm. You know, you can't transfer it back, but no.
Yeah, so I honestly can't see how that...
Did any of you guys hear about the plugging your Xbox 360 into your Xbox One today?
Yes, and they haven't exactly said why you would want to do that.
I think because
the Xbox One's a telly box and it can have telly stuff plugged in, and the Xbox 360 is a telly thing.
I mean, as far as I'm aware, the reason that you would actually want to stick the aerial into the or through the Xbox One before sticking it to the TV is so that you can go TV. Like channel 4 or whatever,
and it'll connect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Connect channel 4, and it will do that. It's like, so there's TVs out there that already do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Badly, most of the time.
I think before I move us on to Sony, I just got to ask: are there any exclusives that anyone is kind of like, I kind of wish I was getting that with whatever my game system of choice is?
I am actually really looking forward to Dead Rising 3, which I know a lot of people aren't, because they think it's taken the series far away from what it is supposed to be. But I just generally like the look of it. I thought it looked... Do you know what?
I like the look of that.
Yeah, it actually, for me, this is the first time I've actually wanted to play a Dead Rising game. Genuinely.
I can't fall into the temptation. To be honest, I've only managed to play like the first Dead Rising game. I've got two.
That was on the Wii version that you...
I actually completed it. Yeah, I completed Dead Rising on the Wii version.
The Wii version doesn't count.
Oh, it counts. It still counts. It just, you know, worked far more rationally and toned down the difficulty significantly.
Technically speaking, because obviously the 360 version had like plenty of zombies, and the Wii version was touted as like, oh, you'll only kind of have a handful of zombies on the screen at once.
Yeah.
Were there actually less zombies in general, or was it just that you can only see the zombies that are close to you?
I would say that attempts to maul you were still at the same level. It's just your ability to see them was, you know... Well, if you moved around, a new set of zombies would try to maul you. Mm. There was always zombies. It wasn't like there was a lack of zombies. It's just the rate of interaction...
It couldn't... render as many.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, obviously, since it's a Wii, not a
360. So other than Dead Rising 3,
what there was that like D was it D4 from? Well, they didn't. Did they show much of it?
Very briefly, it was a couple of clips. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the fact that it's Deadly Premonition guys behind that is really exciting about that.
You see, that's not enough to convince me, because it was like I thought once upon a time that Xbox 360 was the only platform that Deadly Premonition would be released in the US and Europe in, and then it came onto the PS3. So
I'm getting ahead of myself.
Okay. That's the thing, because you know, if gamers have learned anything from this generation, is that just because a system has exclusives doesn't mean they're going to keep those exclusives.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, and can anyone just confirm or just confuse me further, is Kingdom Hearts 3 exclusive to PS4 or is it multi-platform?
I believe it's multi-platform. It's just that we went into Asda the other day, and I was like talking to you know, one of the staff members about Microsoft. And he was like, oh yeah, I want to get a Microsoft because what did you say? PS3? PS4.
I think it's a PS4.
Yeah, you wanted to get PS4 because of Kingdom Hearts 3. And I turned around and said, you know, you do realise that's actually multi-platform now. And it's like, they announced it as an exclusive for PS4, and it's like, yeah,
there aren't that many exclusives now.
No,
I think that's the clever thing as well about when they have presentations on each of these E3 like conferences. Mm. It makes it seem and it makes it appear as if they are exclusive, but they're actually not. Yeah. Perhaps there'll be exclusive content. Perhaps there'll be additional. If you buy it on PS4, you might get an additional character. You might get additional mission. But it's multi-platform, which is quite clever.
And now let's move on to Sony, who I think felt kind of victorious after Microsoft's keynote.
Well, let's be honest. All Sony had to do was wander on stage and say, cheaper, and we're not doing that. And then everyone could have just gone home.
It's kind of what happened. I mean, a lot of people were kind of half disappointed, half glad that, you know, they've just kind of stood up, announced, you know, the price of the console.
Which is £349.
Yeah, and said, we're not doing the daft things that Microsoft are doing this generation. We're keeping it as it is. You know, the concept of not having to have it online constantly...
But
shouldn't be like a
fancy
feature.
They said they were still suggested though that, or has that been confirmed now, that basically it's up to publishers whether or not there's DRM for always.
Yeah, it's not a requirement. Just like the pre-owned charges are not a requirement on the Xbox One, but it's up to the publisher. So it's, you know, if the publishers are evil,
like
Activision EA. they could do that if they wanted. So it's a little bit up in the air whether they can also do that on the PS4. And it's like, it would be in everyone's best interest if they didn't.
I mean, I'm actually quite gutted because we don't have a PlayStation 3. There's a couple of things that we do actually like the look of on the PlayStation 3, and the PlayStation 4 has no backwards compatibility. So we're slightly gutted.
It has cloud gaming through Gaikai, which was just like playing the thing on your actual console.
Yeah.
I think we just
refer back to earlier on the show, thoughts of cloud gaming, and we'll just kind of... Or the episode where we talked about OnLive back last year. Yeah.
I found my OnLive console again.
Did it fall on your head? After sort of like removing stuff or something.
It is very small. It kind of fell on me, a little bit.
Is it trying to kill you?
I went. Oh, it's an online con. It was probably just trying to kill itself.
Goodbye.
Yeah, I don't know what. I'm sorry. Oh, just for God's sake, end it. No, back in the cupboard.
You're going to be collecting dust.
Thank you for the Ethernet cable and the USB. That'll do. Get back in your box.
But I mean, it's quite amazing that the PlayStation 4 is coming out such, you know, under the Xbox One. Obviously, it's probably because
it's Kinect. A role reversal.
It's the price. I honestly, it's like you, Ray was saying earlier about, you know, the Xbox One was coming out. Was it a bit less than you thought it might?
Yeah.
Now I actually thought that the Xbox One would come out at quite a bit lower than it was, because with everything I was reading about it, and especially with the DRM tie-ups, I was thinking the only way it could possibly work properly for them is if they made the entry point much lower.
Yeah.
I know a lot of...
No, go on.
I was going to say, I know a lot of people actually like the fact that Sony were actually making fun of the Xbox about used games and whatnot.
Well, yeah, like that video about how you share games with Sony.
Step
on
one,
their
hand
PS4.
It to your friend. Done. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I still feel that Sony PR for the PlayStation is actually extremely arrogant.
It's not as... What's the word?
I mean, taking direct shots like that, though, that was like, ooh.
Yeah,
it's kind of funny, but by the same token, it's like, ooh.
I actually cringed when it came to the end of the conference. Like, I know a lot of people cheered. I cringe. I was like, wow, really? That's quite... I mean, one thing I've noticed about this generation, I don't know if you guys as well, Sony have been aggressive. I mean, very, very aggressive. Even when when Microsoft were about to announce the Xbox at the back on May 21st, but the day before, they were saying, we're going to drop a bomb. We're going to announce a big game on that day. It's just like, wow, really, guys? You know, you can't just let them have their day to do what they're going to do. It's just like... Nope. Incredibly aggressive PR.
They're as aggressive as they were, but I think they're refocused now. They've realised that the arrogance of the PS3 launch was a big mistake. And I think they must have swapped. You know, they just shipped a box of executives to Microsoft and said, you know, help these guys launch. You know, your new console, because you know they would do a terrific job. But yeah, I see exactly what you're saying. Sony PR has been very aggressive. They have gone far as much as they possibly can, while not necessarily revealing everything about their own product.
Well, what I'm very interested to see is Gamescom, because I think at this point now, this is the last major conference both of them have to really sell the product to the mass public. And I think if Microsoft don't at least have some kind of role reversal on what they've been talking about, it's game over. I mean, Sony are probably going to drop a few exclusives in there to kind of seal the deal. And Microsoft just basically have to kind of, you know, convince people actually, you know, this system is the one that...
I think that what Microsoft are hoping is that all those Call of Duty players will just go and buy a new console.
Well, you say that, but I think it's more the Halo players.
No, I think it's Call of Duty.
I mean, it's a multi-platform game.
But yeah. It has been quite successful on Xbox 360, and they have had the deals with the map packs and things like that, and you know, been heavily promoting all the incentives, positives with Xbox Live Gold playing.
True, but there's a lot of the stuff that obviously even Call of Duty players wouldn't like about the Xbox, so they'd kind of be...
I think we could be pretty certain that if you're quite a dedicated Call of Duty player who's played the last few games, you're the kind of person who does have a decent internet connection, because if you didn't, you wouldn't be able to play your favourite game as you want to play your favourite game.
Also, if you're a fairly dedicated Call of Duty player, you're probably barely registering as human.
Ooh. Ouch.
Ooh.
Have you ever been at a game show when there's been a Call of Duty competition?
No, but do tell.
Imagine 6-year-olds on E-Numbers who have been kept locked in a box until they've got the body of 18-year-olds.
Oh dear.
And then they've just been given all the E-numbers and all the sugary drinks they possibly can, and then they have people going, whoa, whoa, yes, you're really impressive for playing a game. And yeah, just...
I love your metaphors.
Just the foulest shower of entitled bad PR for gaming I've ever encountered. That's professional gamers a lot of the time.
Okay.
Hello to any professional gamers who are listening to the podcast. I'm sure it's not you.
There must be exceptions that prove the rule, right?
But there's been a few videos going around of like Call of Duty players, possibly... No, I don't think it was at the Eurogamer Expo. But there was one going around especially where they were trying to talk to one of the players. And it's like, what an asshole.
Okay.
But you know what I think is quite fascinating about what we're saying about Call of Duty is currently the thing in the moment. And obviously Xbox One has announced that Call of Duty is going to have exclusive stuff again, as expected. But yeah, I do honestly think after seeing Battlefield at E3, I think we're ready to see the change in fortune. I think a lot of people are going to look at Battlefield and they're going to look at the new Call of Duty and think, actually, Battlefield 4 looks more like a next-gen FPS, and I think they're going to get on the back of that rather than Call of Duty. I think we will see a change between the two.
I think Battlefield 4 on next-gen consoles. That's my Amy Pond. It's like, oh, that's quite nice.
Okay.
Well, the interesting thing is that this previous generation, there's been a lot of people that have got multiple consoles. And that's one thing that, you know, sort of like Sony and Microsoft don't really get is that gamers aren't necessarily thinking about competing consoles.
They only have so many people who are brand loyal. Mm. Everyone else doesn't really give a toss.
They're just looking for the better deal.
Yeah, it's like I've had all the consoles anyway, because I'm that kind of person. It's just if a game plays, if a machine plays a game and I like that and I can't play it on the other machines I have, I will buy that machine to play the games. Mm. I'm that kind of, gamer.
But software game, as it were.
Yeah, yeah. I've been primarily just because of the way Microsoft have approached, the whole deal. I've been primarily Xbox, primarily 360.
Mm.
By no means exclusive, but I'm happily happily put my hand up and say that I find stuff a less of a pin in the arse on one format than the other.
Mm.
But with this, it's just no. I have no brand loyalty to you, Microsoft. That machine does not appeal. Everything that Sony are doing with the it's a bit more powerful. It's $100 cheaper.
Yeah,
I think the one thing that could actually change people's minds slightly is if you could actually take over previous save files from previous games.
If there's a narrative tie-in, this sort of thing. What I found interesting was obviously I slightly derided when after Sony's announcement for the PS4 earlier this year, I slightly derided the concept of the whole sharing thing and stuff.
That can still piss off.
Yeah, but in the past week or so, Twitch have announced, Twitch TV, that the Xbox One will be able to stream directly to people's Twitch channels.
Mm.
So you'll be able to live stream from Twitch using your Xbox One. Without anything else involved, other than obviously your internet connection and your game.
Yeah, countdown until PS4 also offers that.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, it was just... Yeah, that was just something that I got an email through from Twitch going, oh yeah, we're doing this. And it's like, But then again, the future of Let's Play videos and gameplay videos is forever in doubt, I'd say. Mm.
I was just thinking that one company you can expect not to see that on would be the Wii U from Nintendo, seeing as their approach with you're doing Let's Play videos of our games, thus helping us sell our games by advertising them for us. We're going to charge you for it now.
We'll not let you make the profit that you would otherwise make.
Yeah, but it's just you're selling our stuff for us. We'll take the pennies. We'll take those pennies.
It does feel a bit like that.
I mean, that
I can kind of see where they're going though, because I mean, they were the ones that created the software.
Yeah, but nobody else has done it.
Yeah, right, by the same token, if you're actually using somebody else's stuff without asking and then actually getting money from
it. It's more the issue of whether or not you're looking at something that's like a creative interpretation of the piece, really. There's some, certainly in America, some amendments type level stuff at play with Let's Plays.
So with that, if you're putting up a film, fine, that's obviously a bad thing. Take it down. If you're putting up a Let's Play of a game or, just a review or a, highlights reel or, whatever you want to call it, that's effectively just saying, look at this, it's cool, you should go play it yourself.
Yeah, but by the same token, they're only doing it when it's monetized. So if you're actually making money off their product.
At the same time, because I can never figure out, when you don't monetize a video, what YouTube does about adding ads to the non-monetized videos, because just because something isn't monetized doesn't necessarily mean I think that ads won't be on it.
Mm.
Because it's kind of like, well, you may not be making money from it, but we can.
I know, but I noticed that on YouTube videos, because you obviously get the ads that happen before the videos, which you have to kind of sit through. And then you have the ads which can skip after 5 seconds. So perhaps that's got something to do with it.
Do you know what would be really interesting? In some ways, going back to the looking at the whole live streaming thing a bit more in depth, is that obviously Sony has a far healthier relationship with Google than Microsoft does. I think we can all say that.
They haven't named a search engine after.
And the thing is that YouTube has been messing around with like who it's been rolling out things like live streaming to. I've noticed a couple of people who have managed to get hold of live streaming. They're not a big deal, and so it does make me wonder, well, if Sony wants to kind of go a step further with the whole video thing, is like, would they make some kind of deal with Google and YouTube to do console streaming, live streaming via, you know, the PS4 and YouTube, basically?
I think they're far more agnostic the way Sony are doing things.
That's
how it strikes me, but whether they actually, you know, would stay at, you know,
yeah,
platform agnostic, I don't know.
I think it's a possibility, I think.
But yeah, I raised the whole thing with the the Trello and, you know, the live streaming.
Do you mean Twitch?
Twitch, yes, whatever. Thing. That thing, it begins with the whole Twitter thing.
Right,
streaming video. Yeah, with games, it's interesting that both of them, both Sony and Microsoft, seem to be doing it with a, you know, so long as we control it, we're fine. But yeah, Nintendo aren't going to, are they?
No.
Well, that's all right, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, with Mario. Actually, shall we get into Nintendo before
Yeah, we haven't checked. Well, PS4 exclusives.
Ah, yeah.
Are there any anyone's interested in?
Beware, I'm wearing my sarcasm hat.
Okay.
But I've enjoyed the Killzone franchise so much because of its excellent gameplay and original designs that that must be a day one purchase for me.
So not really, then?
Not really, no. They look very pretty. They've always been a very nice engine, but get someone else to do the game.
I think The Order 1886 looks quite interesting. I'm a big fan of steampunk. Obviously, with Dishonored, we had a nice, you know, nice go with that, so that was really cool. Okay.
Sorry,
you said steampunk, and I was just like,
Twitch.
It's fine, okay.
She's got a B and a cogs about that.
No, go on. Goggles. They do nothing.
Not when they're on top of my head.
But let's see, that one looked quite nice. I quite fancy the Infamous.
Yeah,
because I
haven't played. I've watched one of the Infamous games being played. Didn't get a chance to play it previously, and I've seen trace of that one. I'm kind of interested.
It could be interesting, but
yeah.
I'm not sure. I've had a bit of a relation with the first two on PS3.
As long as it's better than the second prototype game, I'm sure it'll be fine.
But this is what I was saying to someone. I actually genuinely think, and I know this is not a popular decision, that the Xbox One has better first-party exclusives than PS4. I mean, you've got Quantum Break, you've got Crimson Dragon, you've got Forza 5, Dead Rising.
I think the last table I saw of exclusives totted up between those two consoles, I think it was looking like, I think, 8 for Sony's PS4 and maybe 15 for the Xbox One?
Yeah, they said 15. Oh, was it 15 launch games including new IPs or something?
Something like that, but yeah. But then again, Sony's got that price thing, so it's like, well, there's maybe like one exclusive. I mean, to really care about one exclusive on the PS4 is far greater than my number for the Xbox One.
I think my major excitement is the fact that when the PS4 comes out, the PS3 will be really, really cheap.
Yeah.
So we could get PS3, play those PS3 games, have a chance to play like Heavy Rain.
Yeah. Can we all agree that no one cares about Killer Instinct?
I mean, it's not even the same dudes that been behind it.
Yeah. What is this with like a free-to-play fighter where you've got like you get one character and you have to buy the rest? I mean, what?
Well, to be honest, don't forget that come September, free-to-play might not even be a legal games model in the United Kingdom.
Hey, what?
Well, because there's that, is it Office of Fair Trading or somebody else who's investigating? One of Government Quango is looking into it, you know, department, and it's kind of going, huh, is this particularly legal? Or does it actually break any of our laws? We did talk about it a while back.
Yeah, that's going to be a bit of an interesting one.
Yeah, so I query the business sense of doing any free-to-play models in the UK for the moment until after September.
As long as they don't take off Team Fortress 2.
No, that doesn't... This is the kind of the whole, order to progress, you need to buy more crap.
Ah, right, okay.
Kind of model that they're kind of worried about. And it's like, oh, it's because we need to protect the children. It's like, yeah, well, when they're trying to legislate to protect the children, you're probably going to end up fudging over the adults
See,
anyway.
Now that you've mentioned the children.
Oh, the children. Yeah.
It's the children.
It's the
Think
children.
Of the children.
Oh, there
but
was
not a, like that.
There was another thing. there was another thing for Sony though, because they was. I'm pretty sure they said that, come with the PS4, you're gonna have to pay to play for online for definite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently it's going to be bundled into PlayStation Plus, which is well, you're breaking a promise to keep gaming free, but on the other hand, lovely games.
Yeah. No, you know what? I'm completely happy with that. I mean, they've given us free online.
I'm quite happy with that. It's like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm on PlayStation Plus anyway because you give me stuff included.
I mean, in terms of price, is it still better a better deal than gold on
at the moment? It seems to be.
Well, yeah, because you're still gonna get lots of free games. One assumes it would be like, wow. I'm just laughing all the way every month at the Xbox Gold subscribers like me who don't have PSN Plus and
I mean, you've been paying what, 30-40 quid a year for Xbox Live Gold, and what do you really get for that?
In my particular case, because I do not play Call of Duty, the odd bit of Left 4 Dead online, Mass Effect 3 online, and voice chat.
There is also the fact
And I can stream stuff.
Oh, yeah, being called gay by 13-year-olds as well. That's priceless.
Yeah, I found, because I haven't actually been a gold subscriber for so long, so I never actually used to play online very much. And now I've actually found that I can't actually stream 4OD. And it's like,
yeah,
I thought 4OD
it's
a free service.
It is, but the only one you can actually use on the 360 on Silver is iPlayer.
Yeah.
And that's because there was a big kerfuffle about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but the irony, though, of course, being though that Channel 4 actually does get some license fee payer money, so it's still not.
Also, as a PS3 owner with the 4OD app, I will hand on heart say it's shite on the PS3.
Really? Okay.
It's a terrible, terrible app, and it doesn't have half the programming on that I want.
Like Big Brother.
It does not have the back catalogue for a start.
Oh, okay.
Wow, that is seriously shocking.
Well, that might be something that might improve for the PS4 if they're having to pay, because it might be the whole fact that it's how much infrastructure Sony's willing to fork up for. And it's like, if you're paying for the infrastructure for definite to be...
I was just thinking that, one highlight of using 4OD on my PS3 was I was trying to watch a program that I'd missed. And it was one it was on that week, so they did actually have. So, I selected it. It showed the, one or two adverts before the program started. And then I got an out-of-memory error.
Oh.
What?
Okay.
Which I thought was awesome. I thought, this is living. So I then went and watched it on my PC. But I have no idea what the Xbox 360 4OD app is like.
Mind you, I think the whole streaming thing with consoles is becoming a bit null and void with the other connected devices that people are getting into. That it's like, while streaming for
everything
devices to TVs, probably, I'm not sure if it exists now. It's probably going to be something that's going to exist soon. Imagine, like, say I've got my Sony phone and I've got a Sony Bravia TV, the phone,
yeah,
my Android,
you
can already do that. So yeah, it's fine. It's already there. So I won't need my Xbox One or my PS4 to watch TV, because my phone can do it onto my big fat ass TV.
Oh yeah, or you could just use your TV box.
Yeah. TV box.
No, you're not use the Xbox One at all.
Yeah. It's cool.
A little thing I heard. I'm just checking if it's actually true or not. But you know, Mirror's Edge 2.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that meant to be a? Is it Microsoft exclusive?
No, it's no. multi-format apparently.
Yeah. Okay.
But I've heard little rumours that it's not a sequel, it's a relaunch.
It's a prequel relaunch, I've heard. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so we should probably talk about that in a minute a bit more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but then I don't know whether it's coming out on Wii U.
It's fine because we've got our software bit for the publishers developers in a minute. Sort of like yeah. just the exclusive stuff. So Nintendo, as we all know.
Can I just say that being probably the resident Nintendo fanboy here.
Yes, you are. it's not me.
I initially was actually pretty let down by the the Nintendo Direct because.
But it's Mega Man.
I love that.
Apparently.
But one of the reasons why I was so let down about it is because we already knew ahead of time every single game that was announced.
So it was.
There was no surprises. That was just
a post-announcing announce.
Well, I mean, I think. For instance, they did talk about a new Donkey Kong, which was a surprise in fairness. Yes.
Yeah. I'd have preferred another Metroid, though.
After. Yeah, I think a lot of people would. But yeah.
Is there another Metroid?
No.
Well.
No, they're not working on it at the moment. But...
Yeah, that's what I thought. Did I miss that? Because I would have wet myself.
I mean, if Nintendo were holding off another Metroid because of what happened with Other M, it's because it was Other M. There's your problem.
Yeah, because you gave it to people who screwed it up. That's what. Ooh, went
to be fair though, I mean, people have been sort of like saying that Nintendo games are getting stale, and this is like maybe like second, third, fourth time that they've actually handed over one of their major franchises for another company to do, and they're the ones that have screwed it up.
Mm.
Just proving that Nintendo actually make the best Nintendo games.
Yeah. So basically what we need is another Metroid game that is like the ones that started on the GameCube and ended on
Prime.
The Wii. Yeah, Prime series.
What I just said?
Yeah, sorry. there was no Metroid announcement. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, Samus.
But I am really excited for Smash Bros though, because that is going to be a system seller.
I'll have to take your word for that because it's Smash Brothers.
What I was going to say was, like you were saying, but a lot of people have said they were disappointed with Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing that's good about Nintendo and what they've done, because this was only a half an hour show, is that Nintendo have made it very clear over the last year that they're going to continue to do these Nintendo Directs throughout the year. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if they just showed the bare basics of what people wanted to see at E3, and then they're going to drop a few bombs around, you know, between now and Gamescom and throughout the rest of the year. Because apparently there was a big talk that they were going to show the new Zelda.
Yes, I read about that.
At this Direct, and they kind of held off on it last minute. So there's clearly, there's going to be a reveal soon, and that's going to be interesting.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I actually really do like the look of the new Mario Kart. I know it's basically the same thing, only with HD graphics.
It's Mario Kart.
Mario Kart works.
Yeah.
You know.
I know. I say that with it's Mario Kart. I quite like Mario Kart, thanks.
Yeah.
Whereas with Super Smash Brothers, I didn't understand why people liked the first one, and I just... That incomprehension has just grown with each iteration.
Except what I loved about Mario Kart and the look of Mario Kart is that a lot of people have been crying out for a new F-Zero for a long time, and this has kind of got elements of F-Zero in it.
Do an
F-Zero as well.
Yes, that'd be good.
I'm just trying to imagine that now with the Wii gamepad.
It doesn't, does it?
You could steer it with like just moving the gamepad around. Yeah. And just...
To be honest, that mechanism actually does work very well in Legend of Zelda. Mm-hmm. Oh. Is that a disagreement or is that you're not sure?
You need analog triggers for a racing game. I will now turn on full speed. I've now turned off full speed.
I think last week, Paul and I found that the Wii U is currently turning into a bit of a party console. If we've got people around, it's kind of what the Wii was doing, only now we've got the Wii U, so we can now...
To be honest, I actually quite like the asymmetric gameplay.
Mm.
You know, having somebody that, you know, is kind of doing something else that the others aren't doing.
But I think the worst thing...
Playing a next generation game.
I think the worst thing to come out of E3 for Nintendo wasn't the... obviously, the like a big announcements during the Direct. It was the fact that... Deus Ex Human Revolution.
Yes.
Is that multi-format?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that kind of annoyed me.
Because it's like, okay. Well, you're not going to get the cool stuff that's going to happen with the gamepad, but, okay.
That and the fact that it seems like a lot of the third parties are actually shying away from the Wii.
Yeah.
And that is... I don't like that, because obviously that's going to mean that less people actually buy the Wii U. But by the same token, the first-party titles are going to,
Yeah, I don't understand why Deus Ex actually did go multi-platform. I mean, people have had it. It's an old game for a start. It's 2 years, nearest 2 years old. It's already on the formats in the first place. Why do they feel the need, you know what, we're just going to incorporate this version across the platform? What they could have done stealthily is add a patch for the game. You just download it free of charge, or maybe download it for a fee, like, I don't know, £5 or something, and people wouldn't have cared. But it's the fact that they're going to do a bundle copy at retail to coincide with the Wii U launch, and that's just... You know, it shows a poor, you know, what's poor focus for them.
Was that re-released with the DLC?
Yeah.
It was included.
Missing Link, And they've remastered the boss battles. They've changed the interface a little bit. They've done some tweaks to the AI and things like that. So,
I mean, it's a fantastic game, so I don't begrudge them that. It's just, I don't quite get why they're doing... I mean, other than... Are they worried about actually recouping costs?
But then I would have thought that the cost of having to print the discs out and ship them for that much of sort of like a breadth of consoles just seems a bit kind of crazy anyway. I wouldn't have thought. I'd have thought they've surpassed the point now where they would have recouped costs easily.
Yeah, yeah. Don't get me started on Rayman.
That.
I've got that included for the PlayStation Vita with Plus. I don't have a Vita, but
I mean, other than the like lack of third party support, I think to a certain extent the Wii U stuff was actually there was nothing actually negative about it.
No,
it was all, you know, kind of fairly kind of either yay or okay.
From what I've seen, it was good. It just wasn't a You know, there were no, to steal a term from some people, there were no megatons.
Yeah.
It wasn't, oh my God, they're doing what? I must have that. It was, oh yeah, they're doing another America.
I do think the 3DS is now becoming the platform that's helping them weather the storm at the minute.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Which is ironic because, a couple of years back.
It's a reverse of the fortunes again.
I'll just point out that the 3DS wasn't doing that well until it had a nice big price cut. A Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember big price cuts to save consoles? Are you aware of those? They've gone on record as saying that they're not going to cut the price of the Wii U. At least, this year.
And then there's just sort of like the old suggestion here and there. I'm not sure if we said it last week or recently, but it is becoming a bit like maybe they released it a year too early.
I think they did. I really do. I think if they'd released it at the same time as the PS4 and the Xbox One, which I think they were scared to do, let's face it. I think they were worried about that. If they released it with the same catalogue that they've got right now, I think that people would pick Wii U.
Mm.
Although, by the same token, I think that the Wii U was the console that actually pushed Sony and Microsoft into actually, you know...
Going for this year, for definite.
Because they seemed very, very comfortable in the PS3 and Xbox 360.
I'm not that convinced by that myself.
I think Microsoft needed the new console, and I think Sony were aware that Microsoft needed the new console because the Xbox 360 really is starting to show signs of wear and tear on new games. PS3, not so much. I think the PS3 would have been okay for about another year, but Xbox 360 specifically, and I think that's probably why we are where we are now.
Oh, man. I'll just say,
coming up this Christmas, if Nintendo don't cut their prices, what's the RRP of the premium Wii U in the UK?
Well, it doesn't matter whether Nintendo cut their price or not, because retailers will.
Yeah. But then some of the large retailers like Game haven't, I've noticed. Because it's still over 300 quid for a premium Wii U.
I mean, I've got
when
one
you walk into a shop and it's going to be, you know, over 300 quid for a Wii U, and you go, what new games are coming out? Is FIFA coming out? Nope.
No FIFA.
And but this is a brand new one.
Hmm? Oh, yeah, Call of Duty Ghost Man might not be coming out now after all.
On Wii U.
Yeah, that's a big question mark over that one.
Who knows? What might not be coming out?
COD. The fishing COD. Game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
COD.
Well, the fish swim away from
bass
you,
fishing.
But what's interesting, I mean, there's been all this talk about how there's an issue with third party on Nintendo consoles, but generally, apart from handhelds, third party just doesn't sell very well. It doesn't. I mean, I don't know how many units Black Ops 2 sold on Wii U, but I remember when I had it at launch, there was about 7,000 people online playing it. Total.
In the world, or?
In the world. That's not a lot of people playing a massive title.
Ouch.
To be honest, though, it was kind of like that trying to play Call of Duty 4 on the Wii when I had to review that. There weren't many people there. I managed to find one person to play along with online, and we just had this right old fun time on the multiplayer map, just the two of us.
Reminds me of trying to go online with the 360 Riddick game.
But I think
which sold so well. I tried the multiplayer, just, you know, see what it was like. I got connected with one person who then proceeded to badger me for the next 45 minutes to come back and play and keep playing it because I was the only one he'd seen.
Oh, dude, it was fun. Oh, what was it?
But multiplayer must be included in all console releases. It's what us players want.
Oh, it's weird to get onto older games that were kind of popular on launch and then seeing if any of the online stuff's still working. I remember before Darkness 2 was released, I went back and replayed the Darkness, and then I decided to have a look at the online. And I managed eventually to get connected to like two other people, and it was just the weirdest experience ever being online with just three people in this huge multiplayer map.
But I mean, this is part of the problem, you know, because third-party developers have stuck stuff onto the Wii in gimped form, and then wondered why it isn't. Sorry?
Wii U. Yeah.
In gimped form, you know, sometimes, you know, stuff that has come out the previous year, so everybody's already played it. It's only kind of the Nintendo fans that only get Nintendo consoles that haven't played it yet. And they don't actually give them the content that was actually on the previous, you know, consoles. I mean, that's why Mass Effect 3 isn't selling very well, because you can't get the DLC, and because around the same time you had the Mass Effect trilogy launching on 360 and PS3.
Yeah, it really was
a lot cheaper.
Why would you?
I was just going to... There is perhaps a way Nintendo can get out of this, and they've already sort of made a move towards it. Is it Monolith they bought?
Monolith Soft.
Monolith Soft. And what are they producing at the moment?
X.
Is it X?
I think that's the official title. X. It's a mech RPG thing.
Okay, so so they went and bought a developer. Now here's the thing. I think because in theory, because Nintendo hasn't been doing too badly for too long, they still got what you'd call basically a large war chest still, which is a lot of money saved up to do stuff with. Now, yes, they could do a price cut, or you know what they could do, and they could be about to. They might try and buy the odd developer.
Well, I mean, to be fair,
to make some games.
To be fair, Bayonetta 2.
Yeah, they're bankrolling that.
Exactly.
That's why it's an exclusive to the Wii U.
Exactly,
because the first one sold so well.
But the thing is that I think it's the developer has gone on Twitter to basically say, look, if you want Bayonetta 2 on 360 and PS3, badger Nintendo, see what happens, kind of thing.
Yeah, is it Hideo?
What?
What's the name of the guy that is head of Platinum?
Hamiya, I think.
Hamiya? I saw the tweets, so that was quite funny.
I mean, to be honest, I think that's how Precursor Games could actually get their funding for... Shadow of the Eternals, as if they actually went to Nintendo and, you know, said, look, you know, we did this thing, Eternal Darkness, for the GameCube. We'd like to pretty much kind of do the same thing again, you know, but we need, money for it. Can
and
you
people want to see it.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's not as if, like, you're not going to get any sales from that.
Exactly, but I think it's the fact that they wanted to bring it to PC and whatnot that are stopping them from doing that.
So basically what we're saying is that Nintendo need to stop relying on third party and start going a bit second party, actually.
Well, and obviously they are doing that, but they kind of need to keep on doing that.
They need to do it more, and they need to do it more persistently.
Yeah, but
and on a range of titles.
Nintendo's stick seems to be they sell unique experiences. They need proper unique things to go with those experiences, because just trying to say, oh, you can play a COD on it doesn't really do it.
I was discussing with Paul last week. I said, you know what would really sell a Wii U is if it ended up with a Japanese RPG that had Final Fantasy level graphics, which is possible for like the cutscenes and stuff. But rather than doing what Final Fantasy 15 is revealed to now be doing, which is continuation of the action format but taken further, and I will discuss that in more depth in a minute, is actually do...
Is there going to be shouting?
There probably will be. But do a proper turn-based JRPG. If they funded something like that, because Fire Emblem's done quite well, but that's not quite there. If they properly went out there and like, oh, look, people really loved Final Fantasy X. That was the last Final Fantasy that there was proper unanimous loving for.
Apart from the PAL conversion.
You know, they could actually, if they did something like that, if they did something that was kind of, the genre's been a bit ignored at the moment, but there's still fans. I'm pretty sure I'm not the only person in the world who doesn't care much for action-based JRPGs. I mean, Persona's been doing pretty well. Persona 3 and 4 have been doing okay for the last couple of years, but if if Nintendo did something that was, I'm not saying anime-style graphics, I'm saying Final Fantasy style graphics. So basically what happened with Lost Odyssey on the 360, but without all the grinding being so bad, that might be hope. Anyway.
But yeah, I think Nintendo are actually in a relatively good position at the moment, because obviously they've launched their console. They're building a catalogue up. They've got, you know, a small catalogue of first-party titles that are going to be launching within the next 12 months, 12 to 16 months or so. So I think they are actually in quite a good position. And they're also in the unique position that they're not, and the consumers know it, that they're not actually directly competing with the Xbox One and PS4.
You see, I think they've got themselves a lovely position where they're actually probably going to be the second console in people's homes.
Exactly.
Now.
Exactly.
Which is what happened with the Wii, actually.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I was just thinking that Nintendo might be in a decent position. I'm still not convinced about the Wii U. I still think even if the machine isn't competing with Xbox One and PS4, from a price point, it is. And that's one of the most important things.
Yeah.
They need to differentiate themselves, not only with the software, but they really need to do it from price point as well.
I think it's a pride thing at the moment, isn't it? I think they don't want to drop. They don't want to feel as if they don't want to concede defeat, basically. They don't want to drop down.
It's probably also that they don't want to get into the position where they're actually costing money again by actually selling the Wii U. They don't want to get into that position again.
The rate it isn't selling at the minute.
There must be a balance they can strike with the price.
I mean, the fact remains, I want a Wii U. I don't want to pay the prices that they're charging for them at the moment. There are games I want on the Wii U. I want Pikmin 3.
Mm.
I keep saying this. I want Pikmin 3.
Is there anything else?
Metroid Prime 4? I would find other things.
Zombie U is good.
Yeah. But you know, there's once you've got the foot in the door, then there's other stuff that you want to have a look at that you might not necessarily think, "Oh, I'll buy it for that." And the fact that it's so expensive, if I'm even going to get a new console, you know, a new home console this year, it's going to be one, and if I have to choose between a PS4 and a Wii U, I'm going to go for the more powerful one. That's going to, you know, be getting, you know, the big releases.
this is what worries me about Nintendo. I think they're banking a lot on Christmas, and they shouldn't be, because, you know, it's a two-horse race, let's face it. People are going to go either or, PS4 or Xbox One. And I don't know whether or not Nintendo really, even though they've got a high-profile Mario game, they've got a high-profile Donkey Kong game coming out and all the stuff before it, but I just don't know.
There's too much price competition. That's the situation. They can't afford to just say, oh, you know, here comes Christmas. Our stuff sell.
For £50 more, I can get a PS4, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what's going to be.
Well, less than that. It's insane, really.
Yeah. But I think what Nintendo have been quoted as saying is basically that they're not going to reduce the price, but they're going to basically do the bundles. So they're going to basically be selling the console, but with a game or two. And, you know, that's not something that Sony, as far as I'm aware, is going to be doing on launch. They're not going to be selling a game with it.
The thing is, I hate bundles.
Yeah.
I want the machine cheaper.
Yeah, because you can't quite get the game that you want, so you kind of end up sticking
also,
with one that you're...
Also, a lot of the time when I've walked into a shop, it's, oh, you want a new console. You'll be... Well, with this one, you get a FIFA whatever. It's like, no!
Yeah.
I can actually see them, going back to what I was saying earlier on about Sony being highly aggressive, and I know it's more targeted at Microsoft, but I can also see them targeting Nintendo as well.
Oh, definitely.
With them doing a Vita bundle at Christmas, because remote play is playable on all PS4 games, right out of the box, and I can see them doing that. $450.
That's a question of they would have to lower the price of the Vita.
Okay.
I want a Vita. I have Vita games because of, you know, PlayStation Plus. But because just about the cheapest I've seen one for pre-owned is 150 quid. That's too rich for my blood when it comes to, you know, a handheld games machine.
Okay, I'm going to have to move us on now to anything from publishers, developers specifically, not exclusives, anything that excited anyone that's just, it's going to be on anything.
I'm really looking forward to Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare.
I was just going to say that.
I'm wearing my sarcasm hat again.
Oh, I was actually looking forward to it. Generally.
It's just, let's make an FPS of
Plants
vs.
Zombies. What the hell's going on with Elder Scrolls Online, by the way? What the hell?
Who cares? It's not by the same team. I don't give a toss.
I think,
and that's coming from an big Elder Scrolls fan. It's just, it's an MMO. I've automatically lost interest as soon as it.
One thing that I'm kind of looking forward to, Watch Dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still very curious about that. I want to see if it will actually live up to, you know, a lot of the hype.
Also, obviously, Kingdom Hearts 3, because I'm Kingdom Hearts fan. To a lesser extent, Final Fantasy 15, which is also...
I want to talk about Final Fantasy, but I just want to get back to Watch Dogs in a minute. Watch Dogs, I think, is going to be a really interesting play in our prism-aware world. Anyone bringing in some contemporary political, international issues at the moment. Just the whole idea of anyone having access to your data and stuff, and it's just like, oh, yeah, like the NSA have been doing recently, that...
It took me a while to figure out what you meant by prism. It's like, prism? And then got the logo in my head, and then it's like, oh, wait, that was a new story about that. Oh, wait, yes.
So that, I think that there could be some interesting readings.
Yeah, I've actually heard that, basically, because there's going to be a multiplayer element to it, but each person is going to be, like, the main character, but if somebody else is on your game, they appear as somebody else.
Maybe
I found quite interesting.
Maybe Watch Dogs is actually a propaganda tool, and it's going to make us all feel comfortable with handing over even more of our personal information than we currently do in our actual lives.
Not likely.
I trust the government. They only want to look after us for our best interests.
Yes, and they won't leave our personal data on laptops in parks.
Okay, Mirror's Edge 2... EA rebooting.
Don't reboot.
I think the main fear I've seen from a lot of people is, please do not make guns a thing. And that's like a thing that you really need to use.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, the original Mirror's Edge was not a perfect game, but it was a beautifully realized game. Yeah. And I would really want more like that to come out. So I just, you know, she doesn't run away.
every time.
So, well, I hope that's because she's going to be doing some stunning parkour around the area and, you know, disarming people, and not because she's going to pick up a bloody great gun and start killing everyone. It's like, if I wanted an FPS, I could get Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare.
I can mark my words. I can see this happening with Mirror's Edge 2. Two things will happen. Mm-hmm. One, the rumored Kinect stuff, I think that find a way in. I think it will find a way in. And two, you can almost guarantee there will be a multiplayer mode in there somewhere.
Oh, dear.
If that was races, then okay.
Yeah, now races could be cool. Mm. Races could work.
Especially if there were things like, you know, multiple ways around a level.
Yeah.
Yes. Now that would be ace. I would actually love that.
I'm just thinking, I am imagining that in my mind's eye right now, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, that'd be great.
Actually, talking about multiple paths and free running, I'm actually quite liking the look of Sonic Lost World.
The gasp.
I know that's a bit of an intriguing one, but I did see a developers conference on it, and some of the features on that did look actually quite cool.
But it's really Sonic.
Fact that you actually can only play as Sonic as well, so you can't actually play as like Tails, or they'll kind of pop up during the story, but it is focused on Sonic gameplay.
But I want to play as Shadow and Amy. No one wants to play as Shadow and Amy.
I was just trying to think. Was it Ubisoft who had problems with trying to show stuff for?
I know Battlefield 4 had.
Did Ubisoft have any problems trying to show off the next Assassin's Creed? Or was I imagining that?
Oh dear, I kept restarting my stream because I thought, this stream is just terrible. It keeps freezing. And then I realised that, hang on, they're now showing a shot of the audience.
Yeah.
Who are moving? The screen is not.
That's the thing. That's the thing that Nintendo actually had on the other developers, because it was kind of pre-done. You know, all of the content was there. It was,
If you were on a very bad internet connection, the servers were getting a little bit too interesting.
Yeah, although, to be fair, I think that was a problem on their end.
Streaming Nintendo Direct last week was a bit iffy.
Yeah, probably too many people listening in.
But to be fair to them, it's because their streaming servers were technology from 5 years ago that they've just brought out.
But most of the other conferences, they had so many things wrong with them. And, you know, like news fell on deaf ears and stuff like that.
Xbox One had incalculable amounts wrong with it.
But so I'm pretty sure there's a GIF out there of a guy announcing Peggle 2. He jumps up in the air with his fist and lands down like, yeah! I'm pretty sure nobody was clapping or whistling or anything.
I mean, to be honest, if the Peggle 2
there was a lone unicorn at the back of the room. Clumping his hooves in a rainbow.
Who develops Peggle again?
PopCap.
Yeah,
PopCap. Who EA own? Okay.
There we go. I did not know that.
They bought them the case for a while. Yeah. Anyway, so I said I wanted to talk about Final Fantasy 15. And Square Enix. Just so you know, I am excited for Kingdom Hearts 3. That's the good news.
More mature Sora.
The bad news it kind of depressed me a bit. I've been looking at Johnny Cunningham has been doing quite a few blogs on his blog about E3 and about all his various reactions. And then he talked about his reaction to Final Fantasy 15. And I'd seen the trailer that they released for E3. And I was just like, he was like, oh my God, this is quite cool. And he'd only come into the Final Fantasy series on 13. Which had left him a bit cold. And he's like, God, 15 looks brilliant and stuff. And then I just sort of like looked at it and I was like, and there was me thinking, it's not Final Fantasy 10. And the reason I like 10 is not necessarily due to the storyline or Tidus. It's due to the battle systems and skills systems and the world. It was like after playthrough from 8, 9, 7 and then 10, it was... it was an amazing game to play, and since then, the whole push to action-based play, it's... 12 I could almost deal with, except for the fact that, I swear, it felt like you were penalised for using summons, and then 13 further penalised you for using summons, And now it's like 15, and it's like, well, there's not really any sign of... Was it just me, the trailer didn't seem to show any sign of summon type abilities, did it? Or the teaser trailer plus gameplay.
But bearing in mind that, you know, they've been working on Final Fantasy 15 since it was Final Fantasy 13 Versus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and to be honest, I actually quite liked Final Fantasy 12 in the sense that you could actually almost like build AI for your characters. And they kind of got the licensing system as well a little bit because, you know, it's the entire story is about being like occupied and being like under control, and you have to have, you know, kind of a permit to do like virtually anything.
Yeah.
So that kind of system worked quite well. But I did feel like the main character should have been Balthier.
Yeah, but there's been lots of conversation of that, and the main rumour being that originally he was, and obviously Fran was his main counterpart, but that apparently there was a suggestion maybe somewhere in marketing or the likes that, oh, people wouldn't be able to identify with a 30-something-year-old man.
And they had 30-something-year-old men don't
vote. I'm going to go and slit my wrist now.
But, yeah, but 15, it's like, I really like, the annoying thing about 15 is I really like the look of the story. I find the story intriguing. I find it more intriguing than what was going on with 13.
Yeah.
But it's just I can't see past the action-based gameplay because it's a form of playing RPGs that I don't like.
And it seemed like it had like almost like 10 characters or something like that as well. Quite a few characters.
And as some people pointed out, it almost looked like that, you know, an assassin from Assassin's Creed had tried to sneak into the roll call as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great, you know. But, I mean, how do other people... Am I the only person who feels passionately against an action-style system that seems to be continuing for Final Fantasy?
Yeah, I mean, it works for Kingdom Hearts, but it should not be progressed with Final Fantasy.
To me, Final Fantasy has always been turn-based. And it should be turn-based.
The series has gradually moved away from what it was, you know, with every installment. It's felt less like 7 with every, you know, every iteration. Every time.
I could cope with that up to and including 10. Not 10-2, but up to and including 10. Because the system was just the way you could customize characters in 10 was pretty awesome. And the fact that you could still think about what the heck you were doing in fights.
It also included the ability to switch characters live in fights as well.
Yeah, I up to 10 is fine for me, but even 10-2, I think, when you got to 10-2, I think that started pushing things the other way.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, what the hell are they doing? You got three singing women.
I've only played about the first 10, 15 minutes of Final Fantasy 10-2 because my brain was just melting.
I mean, it was like a love letter to female fans, which
but with fan service to male fans at the same time, it was weird. Yeah.
I don't think it knew what its audience was, to be honest.
It was making me cry, and not in a good way at all. It was just, I don't know what I'm playing. It's just make it stop.
But
I found the storyline intriguing with the whole kind of Tidus, and what's his name?
I can't remember. To be honest, there might be some people who don't want the storyline spoiled, so maybe we shouldn't go much further.
I'll just go on record as saying I thought Tidus was a really hateable character.
It was in 10. It was Yuna, Lulu, and Riku, and Auron that kind of saw me through the game.
And Wacker, I quite like Wacker.
Yeah, I like Wacker.
Kamari was cool as well. Tidus is just like
he's a wonky jock.
Yeah.
And he just unfortunately was the protagonist.
Oh, and since 10, the quality of minigame has gone downhill.
Blitzball was brilliant. Blitzball.
Yeah,
highlight for me.
Then obviously, like Final Fantasy 9 and 8, they had Triple Triad.
It was called something else. They had different names.
Oh, yeah.
And they had different systems. But the quality of minigame has gone downhill since 10, in my opinion. It's just being all the little bit of charmy stuff that basically they had is just kind of gone.
Yeah,
I mean Final Fantasy VII never really had like a really really strong game either, did it?
The Chocobo Racing.
Oh, that's true, actually. Yeah, although that's slight half betting half actually. You know, playing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But yeah, so 15. Maybe I'll just have to watch somebody play it and then cry into a corner. Maybe that's what I'll have to do.
Yeah, we'll get it, and then I'll play it, and you'll just be like puking up.
Let's make it work.
What are they doing that for? Oh god.
But you know what? Generally, the third party stuff this year, I think, is some of the best I've seen from E3. Mm-hmm. All of it. I mean, you had DuckTales, you had Dead Rising, you had Plants, you had Dragon Age 3, you had Mirror's Edge 2, Metal Gear 5, Castlevania. There was so much going on.
I'm still trying to figure out what BioWare need to have done with Dragon Age 3. Is it Inquisition?
Yeah.
What they have to done with that, with the systems involved, to make sure that it doesn't cause the same sort of outpouring that 2 did. And I love 2, and I liked Origins, but I'm in the minority, apparently. So
no, I liked both of them.
Yeah.
You can guarantee on this podcast, if you say, I'm in the minority, and state your opinion, we'll all agree with you.
This is true. Maybe we are the minority. It's everyone else outside of the podcast.
I'm in the minority. I think Xbox One won. Sorry, wrong half again.
Yeah, sarcasm.
Yeah.
But what one of the things they need to do is less identikit dungeons. Because that was really annoying in Dragon Age 2.
Yeah, I mean, I got what they were doing with Dragon Age 2, like in the same environment, and it's changing cycles. But at the same time, I wanted to move outside. I wanted to explore. I wanted more.
I've just remembered that. Oh, there was something I was excited about with Nintendo Direct. I've just seen more of Pokemon X and Y.
Yes.
I just like the way they've changed things, because it's how I wanted the game to move on after Yellow. Gosh darn it. I've been waiting that long. I've been waiting since Pokemon Yellow for something like that to happen with the displays used and the graphic style used and the points of view used. It's a long time to wait for a big, drastic change like that. It's more than 10 years.
I'm waiting for a sequel to Loom.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and Day of the Tentacle.
Yes.
Oh, well, dear, but wait, who published Day of the Tentacle? Who's got the rights to Day of the Tentacle?
LucasArts, who are now dead.
Yeah.
I'm
screwed.
I'm kind of looking forward to when... guys behind Red Dead Redemption... No, not... Behind Road Redemption, actually managed to finish their game, which is basically a Road Rash type thing.
Yes.
Oh, that was what was confusing me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay. Are there any indies that came out strong on the back end of E3?
I think Jaw Limited. They with the Oddworld stuff. They really look like they were at the feature for a lot of it, and you know, I think they're very outspoken about Xbox and their feelings on that, and how they've just basically shown a strong affiliation with PS4, and now they're going to be on Wii U, and they've got their game on the mobile. You know, they look they're on fire.
So it's I think everyone but Xbox One.
Because I remember going a couple of years ago to X-Play in Plymouth.
Yeah.
And that was like indie video games type thing. And a lot of the conversation there was about tablets and whatnot, because, you know, the main consoles didn't really support indie. It was, you know, tablets going on tablets and not even Steam, but, you know, just kind of general PC and stuff like that. And I'm kind of glad that the consoles or console makers have actually woken up and been like, actually, we should get these people on board.
Except for maybe Xbox One, but
yeah. But I mean, Nintendo and Sony have, you know, leaps and bounds at going towards indies, which is a brilliant thing.
And Microsoft have utterly squandered the indie games.
Yep.
Marketplace, which is a huge pity, because there were some brilliant releases on that. But when you've got a situation that when I am interested in what's coming out on it, and it's next to impossible to find anything.
Okay, I want to use these final moments of the show. I say moments, a little more than a couple of moments, to talk about the expansive DLC Indiegogo campaign that's being run at the moment by Ray. Ray, what is it? What's going on? Why? Oh my god, what's going on?
Yeah, well, as I say, I set up Expansive DLC back in January, which is basically, it's a site sort of dedicated to expansion patches, mods, fixes. Basically, it's sort of a one-stop hub for where I see the future of the industry going. With indie sort of journalism setups at the moment, as people are probably aware, there's a lot of issues with ads. Ad campaigns are just, for setups like mine, they're just not viable. There's no way to sort of make any money on the back of that. There's no way to kind of, you know, basically make a full-time career out of this. So what I've decided to do with the Indiegogo campaign is effectively just give it a shot, really, and just sort of basically lay out my whole kind of plan for the site over the next few years. Lay it all out on the internet so everyone can see what it is I'm intending to do and see if it's something people want to invest in, really, and just leave them go for it.
Okay. How long has the campaign got left at the moment?
At the moment, well, I set it off for about 3 months, and at the moment it's got 28 days left, because on Kickstarter I think you can only up to 60 days. So that was one of the reasons why we went with Indiegogo, because it allows you that. But also the other reason we went with Indiegogo is, even if you don't meet your total, whatever money is funded, you can actually have some of that money, and then you can actually use that to, you know, develop the site further, which with Kickstarter, basically, if you don't meet your goal, you don't get anything.
Okay.
So Indiegogo allows you to do that, which is great. And we have, at the moment, we've made £90 on the campaign, which, you know, is fantastic, and, you know, probably more than I expected to get, to be quite honest. But we were actually using that already to do bits with the site, which we've kind of outlined a bit in the on the campaign itself.
Okay, cool. I'm trying to think. There was, your rewards. I'm finding them a little interesting.
Okay.
Could you explain them, sort of the you don't have to go too in depth with the tiers, but there are tiers.
I mean, basically you've got the basic tier, which is just gives you what one things we're trying to do with the campaign is, I want to try and do an expansive app which basically allows people to have all the information on the site. They can just grab it on their phone, have a look on the app, get all the information that's up to date. So one of the basic things was, you get early access to the app to kind of help beta test it and just to see whether or not it works, you know, whether or not you can offer suggestions. Another thing we want to try and do is the easing. What I'd like to do is have an expansive easing where you have a look at all upcoming DLC or patches or patch reviews that we do, mods and all that kind of thing, and basically implement it into a sort of a magazine in one digestible form. So that's something we're looking at. But there's other things we're adding here, like we've got historic game coverage, which basically we allow the people to have two choices of games they'd like to cover on the site, going back even as far as PS1, PS2, or however far they want to go back. We're also doing sort of events and interview perks, where one of them is we actually send someone to an event. They can do some reporting and basically come away and get experience about the industry. I've you know, basically play games before the release, and you know, they can have some of the work sort of published on the site. And just there's various things that we're looking at the moment. For instance, the comic book, the big one is, we're basically allowing people to become the voice of our mascot, Jeff the Cat. So basically anyone who backs that campaign, they can all audition to be the voice. And yeah, it's one of those people would be picked, and they would basically be on our podcast. They would be on all our vidcast a lot.
Okay.
There's a real variety on there.
Goodness. Okay. We're going to make sure that we've got a link to this and to Expansive in the post to accompany this, in case anyone's wondering. So you know, if you can't remember the addresses or anything in a bit, you can find it. If you had to choose or had to explain one particularly big reason, other than perhaps advertising, as to why people should fund this, why should people fund this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, crowdfunding for an existing website has unquestionably caused dispersions in the industry. People will say, we're already getting this content, why pay for it? Some of this information is freely available elsewhere and they don't charge. What makes you so special? I would say right now it's because Expansive is doing the kind of the different thing with DLC and expansion and patches and mods. Again, you're not really getting that anywhere else at the moment. But also, I mean, you guys have seen with Polygon, they do progressive review scores, which again has elicited a lot of controversy. We do something called patch reviews, which I think is a fairer way of and a more balanced way of doing it, where basically you have the game is overviewed initially. When you get a release, which basically fixes the game in what state, we'll basically review that patch. So we review the game before the patch, after the patch, and the overall game as it is. One major instance of that was with Crysis 3. The game before one of the recent patches was broken. The single player, the final boss was broken. You couldn't get past it on Xbox.
So completely game, broken then?
Basically, yeah. You couldn't get past the final boss properly. It glitched on you. So wonderful. With the patch review, you basically it solved all that. And for us, it basically added a point to the game because you know you could actually finally complete it. So I think for that, it kind of gives games, especially while looking at games like SimCity, especially, which had the worst launch possible, and look at it now, has actually got a lot better. So it gives games like that a chance that may have had the poor start, but developers have been working on it to try and get it right. And, you know, they've got it more right now. And it actually people may actually look at it and think, you know what, I'm actually buying that now. You know, we're past the hurdles. We're at the point where people would buy it. So you've got patch reviews, you've got overviews. And again, I think one thing I'd like to do is with mods, there's not really a place at the moment where you can really see mods in their kind of their entirety and see what games have got what mods. What I'd like to do is kind of a database where people can go to Expansive. They can see mods for a particular game. They can click on them, see if they're worth looking at. And it's kind of a one-stop shop, basically, so that they can just go to the site and they've got everything in front of them without having to go anywhere else.
Brilliant. It does sound pretty awesome, actually. I do like the idea of this.
And very unique as well.
Mm. Okay.
Thank you.
That's all right.
That could come in handy.
Mm. Especially if I actually do my backup plan for gaming over the next 5 years, which involves me getting a proper gaming rig. And cool. I decide that I want to use mods for Skyrim. Because that's inevitably what will happen if I get Skyrim for PC, is there will be severe mod involvement. I mean,
presumably you wouldn't be doing anything on Team Fortress 2, because otherwise that would just like double your workload.
Yeah. Yeah, but having said that, I mean, one thing we're doing is columns. So we're doing a lot at the moment. We've got a Defiance column, which we're working on. We've got a League of Legends column, which again is quite unique. And we've got a Guild Wars 2 one. So what we could probably do as well, even with the mod side of things, if that was to happen and be able to do more content with that, we'd probably look to do columns within that. So Team Fortress stuff, rather than just listing each one individually, we might do like them in bulk. So maybe like you've got these costumes and you say, well, this is good, this isn't that good. Just give it like a line. Yeah.
Okay.
So something like that.
Brilliant. Okay, well, I'm afraid that is all we have got time for this week on this extra long episode. So, it's good night from...
As from me, Ray Wilmot. Thank you very much for having me on here. I'm at Ray Wilmot if you want to have a chat with me. And if you want to see the Indiegogo campaign, it's at indiegogo.com/projects/the-next-phase-of-expansive-DLC.
And it's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett. I have a website, paul-blewett.com, and I'm on Twitter as Paul Blewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at ek6891. You can also go look on my website at drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. You can find the Nerds Assemble podcast over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. You can also find us on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're on Facebook and Google Plus under Nerds Assemble Podcast. We may also be looking on Pinterest now. It could be happening. There is stuff. We posted lots of stuff.
There's stuff.
Oh yeah. So, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.